What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Seven Figure Flipping Podcast. This is Bill Allen. We got three amazing big points that came up on this. One is we talked about mobile homes, what to look for, what to avoid, and how much money you can make with them. Number two, we talked about dealing with contractors, going over timeline, over budget, how to negotiate with contractors, and how to make sure that they hit their deadlines and their budget and lessons learned from when they don't. And the third one is a securities-backed line of credit. We talked about a security-backed line of credit, how you can keep your stocks and use your money to flip houses. This is an amazing show and you don't want to miss it.
My name is Bill Allen and I'm the leader of a group of elite house flippers and wholesalers called Seven Figure Flipping. We don't brag or show off our success, but instead let integrity and stewardship be our guide. We are dedicated to helping people unlock the freedom they desperately need. If you ask other real estate investors, they will say to keep your secrets quiet. But we believe in abundance, not scarcity. And that's why we are the elite. We are Seven Figure Flipping, and this podcast is our playbook.
Hey everybody, I am really excited for today's show because we've been doing this series of kind of going through deals, like actual deals that some of our members have done. And so it's getting really exciting. I've been enjoying it. I think a lot of the feedback we've gotten has been really good. So actually seeing what a real deal looks like, some of the things that lessons learned, how they found them, how they funded them, how they negotiated them, some of the tricks that they used, a tactic that they used. It's been really incredible. I've actually been learning a lot, taking a lot of notes, and I'm excited about today because we're talking about something that we haven't really talked about on the show that much. I think I've done like one or two interviews on a kind of topic like this. So I've got someone on the show that I want to introduce you to, and we'll hear a little bit more about her and her deal in a second. But Heidi Prado, how are you, Heidi?
I'm great. I'm very happy to be here, Bill.
I'm happy that you're here too, because I love learning more about our people. I love just kind of getting to know folks. And I think this is a really great way to do that, especially when we only get together maybe once a quarter or people are on virtually on those quarters and things like that. So this will be a great opportunity for me too. So can you tell everybody a little bit about you? So maybe a little bit about your background and kind of how you got into real estate.
Sure. I'm a physical therapist by trade. And worked in therapy and administration for 24 years. But always struggle with the family work balance and ever since having children. And also kind of developed an interest in house flipping. I'm embarrassed to say through watching a lot of HGTV, but I just thought the challenge looked exciting and the transformation was fun to watch. So I prayed about leaving my job for about 2 years and then felt that I had a true answer from God to leave. So I left my W-2 in October of 2021 and have been flipping full-time since.
Awesome. Okay. Let me ask you, what are some of the HGTV shows that you watched and which are your favorites?
Flip and Flop was what I was watching quite a bit. And I feel like you could learn a lot from those shows. Really. I mean, you don't learn a lot about obtaining deals, but you do learn a lot about not over improving and a lot of the challenges that you could come across.
The reason I asked is because I kind of got my start watching those shows too.
Did
like
you?
Those are at least what inspired me to kind of start. And when I went back in time, I started thinking like way back. I remember when I started like really trying to learn how to cook, and Emeril Live was the show that I was watching then. And it got me really interested and excited about how to cook because he made it fun and exciting. And like cooking was like, he just made it kind of cool, you know? So then I started learning how to cook, trying recipes, like reading different books about cooking, like literally reading a culinary encyclopedia, like a French encyclopedia about cooking and all the different cuts and knife cuts and things like that. Like just went pretty crazy. And I did the same thing for house flipping. I started watching the HGTV shows, and I don't think you should be embarrassed to say that. Like it's what got you inspired, right? It got you excited. And some people might like think that that's not where you should start, but that's exactly where I started. like 10 years ago, 12, it was probably 15 years ago. I started watching Armando Montalongo was like the first guy that I watched on TV. It was probably 15, 16 years ago in Texas. And then he was having all these like foundational issues on that show. And then started watching like Flip or Flop. And then like all of it, like Love It or List It, Millionaire, Million Dollar Listings. And like all, I watched all of it in the beginning. And so obviously I had a lot of time on my hands because I was watching so much TV. So I just replaced that time with actually the doing it. Like I replaced that TV watching with doing. And then I bought the Home Depot 123 book, that big orange book, and just started like trying to fix up my house that I lived in. And then I went on to, you know, buy some houses and buy rentals and things like that. So that was kind of the same story as me. Okay. Tell me about your family a little bit. You said you were having kids. How many kids do you have? What is that? How old are they? What is that?
I have three children. My son is 20. He's a freshman in college. And then I have twin daughters that are 16 that are in high school. Yeah. And so leaving my job, I felt a little time crunch. I wanted to be available for my son, you know, his final years of high school, and just have that flexibility.
Yeah. You mentioned that work-life balance. I think that's what a lot of people are looking for when they get into real estate. So what a lot of people are trying to struggle with their job. Like for me, I was like deploying in the military and traveling a lot, but I had no desire to leave my job when I started real estate. Like I was just, I'm going to jump into real estate, have a side hustle, make a little extra money. And then my side hustle just became the real big thing that started doing well and became my full-time thing. One more thing, where do you live, and then where do you flip? And then also, we'll kind of go into some of the projects. You said you've been flipping full time since 2021.
I live in Savannah, Georgia, and I flip in this area and within a couple of counties, pretty close by. But I'm not remote yet.
Nice. I love Savannah. I went to school in Atlanta. Lived there for 5 years. We'd go to Savannah all the time. It's a really beautiful place.
It is.
There's a lot of like historic houses and things like that. Do you work on those? What kind of project? Give me like an idea of what your projects look like.
Well, there's a lot of older homes in Savannah. I don't go down into the historic district yet. I mean, there's a lot of guidelines and restrictions, but a lot of my homes are from the 50s, 40s and 50s. So older than some areas, I think, of the country.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some of these projects. You said you left your W-2 in 2021, and you worked in physical therapy for 24 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's so. 2021, left your full-time job. Did you just leave your job and start flipping? Were you flipping on the side before you left your job? What was it like when you transitioned from your full-time job to being full-time?
I left in October, and I bought my first flip in December of 21.
Okay, so you really just were like, okay, I'm leaving my job and I'm doing
yes. it. Yes, yeah, burn the boats.
Okay, tell me, like, I think people hear that and they think it's like a little wild and maybe risky. So why did, like, talk me through like some of the thought process of that. You mentioned praying about it and God telling you that it's fine to leave the job. Did your husband have a job? What was some of the like, maybe some of the spiritual side of it, and then also some of the, like, I don't know, like, how did you feel comfortable doing that? Because other people are going to, there's just a lot of people that are watching and listening to this that are like, I want to do the same thing. Maybe I should quit my job before I flip my first house.
Well, I mean, my husband and I work really hard and definitely build up some financial stability and savings that allowed us to have a life preserver if we needed it. So, and he owns his own company, and was able to probably support us if we failed completely, but failure was not an option for me anyway. But
So the mindset was, I'm going all in on this. We won't fail. But there was kind of a backup plan. So same for me. Like I decided not to leave my job, but I had like, you know, $60,000 that I set aside for this. 25 went towards the coaching program that I joined, and then 30 was towards my marketing campaign, running my business, all that stuff. So about 55K, 60K. And I just said, hey, I'm all in on this. I'm still going to fly, still going to work my job. But on the side, I'm going to give it everything that I have. And it's got 6 months of runway. I need to make this work inside 6 months, which I gave myself plenty of time to make it work. And it was something that I loved. So that's great. So you left in October, bought your first deal in December. And what were you doing like leading up to that? Were you educating yourself? Were you, and how were you doing
that? Yes. I mean, hours of podcast, Bigger Pockets, and eventually your podcast and your book. But I, yeah, a lot of reading, a lot of podcast leading, probably at least a year leading up. So
So there was a year of this like fire burning inside of you of like, I want to get into real estate. I'm really excited about it. So there's like education, going through that, listening to podcasts, listening to inspiring stories, getting the push, getting the tap, praying, and then saying, okay, this is my time. And October 2021, left your job. And had you gone to any events? Like, did you ever go to any events or conferences or meetups or anything like that? Or was it all done?
It was all done from home. So,
okay.
And
I was the same way.
Yeah. Now that's changed since then. Obviously I've been to your events and meetups and whatnot, but everything leading up was done from home.
Nice.
I also worked on my real estate license and got that in 22. So.
Okay. And why'd you do that?
Several reasons. I wanted access to the MLS and for easier access to looking at homes on the market. I also thought that I would probably use it to buy and sell my homes, but surprisingly, I'm not. I use agents and I'm doing that on purpose. I left my job for a little balance, and now I feel like my new job is finding deals and running my business and not buying it, selling the real estate as an agent.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So you did it for the same reasons I did. I was tired of waiting for people to open the doors for me of the houses that I was looking at. So if I wanted to go see something, I just wanted to drive over there and see it and not wait for somebody to open the door. So so that's it. I never really bought and sold a house. I helped maybe two people go through a transaction myself, but it was not exactly. You're trading it for another full-time job and the work-life balance is not good. So no retail stuff, helped a couple other investors just put in offers and things. But I mean, you're talking $1,500, $2,000, $3,000. It just wasn't worth it. All the work that had to happen and all the compliance and everything. It was just, it wasn't for me. So I did it so I could just log into the MLS. I could go actually like use the key fob to open the door. And I not, because I was just so tired of like agents, I can't get there till tomorrow. Or can you do 10 a.m.? I'm like, no, if it's raining and it's bad weather at work, I'm going to look at a house because I'm not flying and I can go look at a house. And so I just needed speed for me. So, okay, let's talk about some of the deals. You bought a house in your first flip in December of 2021. Did it go well?
It did go well. So I partnered up with my real estate agent that was helping me find a property. She had investment experience and construction experience. So she became my project manager. So I brought the funds and she brought the sweat equity. And we did four deals together over the next year and a half. The first deal was a tiny little 850 square foot, three bedroom, one bath house that was, I found on the MLS. I watched the MLS and I watched for the price drops, and this one came back up and the seller was motivated. It was a probate. So it went well. We bought it in December and I think we had it back on the market and sold within 3 months. So, and I think I made approximately $30,000.
Nice. $30,000 on the first deal.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your half or is that you had to split that with the agent?
No, that was mine. That was mine.
Oh, your half. So you guys had a split. So you actually made more than that. Okay. So it's four houses with the agent. You found somebody who had some experience where you didn't. And then you could bring value in another area, which is, it sounds like you were funding the deals. Were you funding them all out of like your cash account? What, like you had the money and you saved it up? What was that like?
The first deal was from our savings. And then I secured a securities-backed line of credit. And for most of my deals, that's what I use. I have used hard money on one other deal, and I'm closing on a deal next week that I'll use hard money. Kiavi.
Nice. Yes. Hey, can we talk about that? You mentioned a securities-backed line of credit. So let's talk about that line of credit real quick. What is that?
So it's a line of credit from investments that we have. So,
are they all stocks? What are they?
They're funds, the different funds. They're a mixture, stocks and bonds. Yeah.
Okay. So this is not something that we've talked about on the show before, really ever. I understand what it is, but I want to make sure we educate the people that are out there. So, so you have a, like some sort of brokerage account or some account that has stocks and bonds in it. And what you did was you said, hey, I want to actually put a line of credit against that. So most people are listening to this understand a home equity line of credit. So you own a house or you're a rental house or a building like I'm in right here. I'm in an office building at 16,000 square feet. If I had multiple millions of dollars of equity in here, I could put a line of credit on this and it attaches and secures to the building, right? So then I take out some sort of equity on it. I'll draw on it and I'll have to pay interest either monthly or however the bank structures it. And then if I sell the property, I have to pay off that line of credit. So I'm not allowed to sell the property without paying off the line of credit. So they attach it here. This building is the security, or my house is the security, or like I have a line of credit on my farm. And then they know the value of it. So they'll give me a percentage of the value and they'll give me access to up to that much. So if I have it drawn out, 100% of it is drawn out and I'm using it, when I go to sell the property, I have to pay off the line of credit and then I can take the difference. Now, in this case of a securities-backed line of credit, it's really the same thing, but you have a stock or a bond account that you're saying, hey, it has this much value. They look at it and they give you some percentage of value. Usually it's at a lower percentage a lot of times. And like you actually could do this with almost anything. You can do it with, if you had a bunch of notes, so let's say you were doing hard money loans and you had 10 hard money loans out there. You could pledge those hard money loans against a line of credit. So you're actually lending money out there. You're making 12 to 15% interest in points or whatever you're making. And let's say you have $1 million of hard money loans out there. There's probably a bank that would secure 500,000, like 50%, 40, 50% of a line of credit against those notes that you have, especially if they were long-term notes. If you have long-term notes against, like, backed with really good security, like these houses, they could collateralize those notes and give you 50% of the value. So now you're making money on your notes and you can take that, you know, 50% of that value and go make money on the $500,000 on flipping houses. So Heidi did the same thing. She put it against stocks and bonds, a brokerage account or some sort of security-backed account, and said, hey, well, I'm going to pledge this. And then her money, they don't have to sell the stocks. So most people are like, I'm going to sell my stocks and bonds, I'm going to go out and use that money for real estate. Well, they're double dipping. So they can take and make money on the stocks and bonds. So like if they sold their stocks in 2021, so the stocks had just crashed, right? In mid 2020, 50% loss, and it was starting to go back up around this time, right? Going back up and up and up. So as it's going up, they collateralize those stocks, take a equity line, and go flip house, make $30,000, pay off their equity line back and forth and just use it when it's needed and draw off it. And they're making money in the market and they're making money in real estate. Does that sound right, Heidi? Did I explain it properly?
Yes. Yeah, you're right. And I could loan to other people because the rate is so good on the line of credit. So
what rate do you have on the line of credit?
It's 7.75 right now. It's prime minus a percentage based on how much you take out. Nice. Obviously, the more you borrow, the lower the rate. So,
yes, that's really awesome. So usually you hear prime plus something. But if you think back like 2 years ago, they probably had a much lower rate because prime was so low. Now the prime rate has gone up. Same thing with my home equity line of credit. It just kind of floats with prime. So, you know, I just look and say, hey, the money's a little bit more expensive right now than it was a couple years ago, but still works for me. It's still some of the cheapest money that I can pull out. And it really, like I mentioned, double dipping. This is very similar to, similar but a little bit different to the like insurance stuff that we talk about on here, where you're, you know, funding a big whole life policy with paid up additions, and then you're taking a loan off of it, but you're still getting a dividend inside that policy while your money's being used. In this case, Heidi, you still make money on 100% of your securities, right? So yep. The securities are going, they go up in value, and you're still making money on that. Do you mind sharing the percentage of like loan to value that they gave you for the line of credit?
They loan 50%.
Yeah, that's usually what I see. Usually it's a cap of 50% on something like this, just because it fluctuates a little bit more than you would see on a house. So a house, a lot of times I can get up to 90% value on a home for a home equity line of credit in first position, but in a security based or a notes or something like that, if I'm cross collateralizing, about 50% is kind of the cap. And frankly, when they look at it, it makes sense for them too, because the market has never dropped 50% over a period of time. Like it's just, they can expect that kind of fluctuation, they still have good security against your stocks and bonds. So amazing. I've never talked about on the show. I'm so glad that we hit that. I think it'd be really valuable to people who are out there, because I'd say 90% of people think that they have to sell their stocks, cash out. They probably have some sort of credit hit that would hit them. And then they use that money to go do real estate, where you can actually collateralize it like this. And who did that loan for you? Was it like a local bank? Was it the brokerage?
It's the brokerage.
Yeah. So the brokerage is double dipping. So the brokerage now is getting the fees. So they're getting the expense ratio and the management fee if they have some and things like that for the bond. So now she's not selling her stocks. So they still get their expense ratio. An expense ratio is like a percentage of assets under management that you have in a certain bond or mutual fund or, you know, index fund or whatever it is. And then, so they get a certain percentage of what she has. And then if they're doing some active management, they might put a 1% management fee on that. And now they're making the interest fees on the money that they're loaning to Heidi as well. So they're basically double dipping as well, but it's a win-win for everybody. So win-win-win across the board. It's great. Like, I love it. That's brilliant. I love it. I think more people should be doing that. Okay, let's talk about a deal. Let's break a deal down now. That I kind of went off on a tangent there, but I think that's really exciting. I'm glad we talked about that, because I've never had somebody come on the show and discuss that before. So
yeah,
well done.
It's really opened up my business. It's done well to have those funds available and rotating. So there's a deal I did last year. I was at a meetup, and by nature, I am so introverted. I'm so shy. I force myself to go to meetups because I know how important it is to have a network. And I've seen how my business has grown by meeting wholesalers and other investors. So I was at a meetup and I met a agent/wholesaler. And he asked me if I had ever flipped a mobile home. And I said, no, but I'll listen. If the numbers work, we'll look at it. And the numbers did work. So that deal took a little while to close. I was learning as we went along. Since it's a mobile home, we had a title on the land, but we didn't have a title on the mobile home. So my agent was great staying on the seller to go through the DMV to get the title on the mobile home. But we finally were able to close in October of last year on that mobile home. And I was just so surprised at the ARV. I just didn't realize that double wides sell for the same amount as a single family home.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. So mobile home, you mentioned the title. So mobile homes are interesting. They're either personal property. So like you said, going down to the DMV and titling it like you would a car, or they're real property and titled in like, you know, land and mobile home. So you have to, that's one question that you should ask a seller when you go try to figure out what's going on with the mobile home. So do they have the title? Is it a title like a vehicle, a personal property, or is it a real property type title like a home? And so you had title for the land. So they had land, which was real property, obviously. And then, so they own the land. It was a mobile home on the land that they own. So they're selling both to you. But if you just titled the land over, and they could have taken the mobile home after closing down the road. So good job getting that going to DMV, figuring that out, getting the title on the mobile home. So what did you buy this for?
I purchased it for $125,000.
$125,000. Do you know how much the wholesaler made?
I think they bought the mobile home at the courthouse. It was a foreclosure, so I believe they purchased it for about $85,000.
So the person, they got some fees and probably money costs and things like that. But you know, maybe $35,000 to $40,000 they made on it. That was great. For the wholesaler side. Okay, and then so you met this person at a meetup. They are wholesaling you this deal. Were they asking 125 or were they asking more?
In fact, we didn't have an asking price, so we had to negotiate.
Okay, so they just said, hey, I've got one of these. Do you want to flip it? We don't want to flip it.
They did have a number, and it was definitely higher than $125,000.
Okay, so it was higher. You negotiated a bit. Mm-hmm. And what did you think the ARV was before you started?
200.
200K. So you thought it was 200K. And how much work did you think it was going to need?
I thought it was going to need about 25,000.
25K. And it was a double wide, did you say?
Mm-hmm. It's
okay. Double wide mobile home. Was it in bad shape?
No, it was dated. They had pulled the flooring out. So there was no flooring and it needed, an HVAC. But otherwise it was in pretty solid condition.
So HVAC and some cosmetic lipstick type work that needed to be done, a little bit of flooring. Yeah. Had you ever done a mobile home before this?
No.
Okay. No. Just houses. You'd done regular single family.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you bought it, you closed on it, 125, had to jump through all the hoops of going to the DMV to get the title and clearing that up in October, 2023, you purchased it. And then, how long did the rehab take and what was that like fixing it up after closing?
I used a new contractor because I was having issues with my existing contractor. And he was great. He was very available and responsive. And we completed the rehab in 4.5 weeks.
Yeah. Any issues that came up along the construction? Any lessons learned for mobile homes versus single family houses? Any of that stuff?
No, not necessarily. I mean, it did flip very much like a single family home. Other than when it came time for closing, you had to have tie downs for weather, and that was something different. But the only issue we came across was additional expenses. So his original bid was about 25 and then he ended up being closer to 35,000.
Okay. So landed around 35K. What were the additional things that came up?
Well, I think he just didn't, his strength is not bidding the project, being very thorough on bidding the project. So I listed out the scope of work, and because we were just working together for the first time, I think when we moved forward working together, I needed him to line item everything out going into
the deal. He said, looked at the scope of work, said, I can do this for 25,000.
Yes.
And then along the project, he probably got to 25,000. Like, oh crap, I got a lot more work to do here.
He had add-ons. Yeah.
So how did that conversation go? And as flippers and investors, how should we handle that when contractors do this? Because I mean, at that point, your house is not done. You spent 25,000. And so like, when did it come up? What was that like? How did you talk about it? Because I mean, that's coming out of your pocket when you go to 35K, right?
And I'd say it's a continual problem with all the contractors I work with. I only have one home where they came in exactly where they were supposed to be on budget. And it's a learning process for me as well. Trying to learn how to work with different contractors, building in contingencies, I think is a good plan for a contractor because you don't know what you're going to find when you open up walls sometimes. And the contractors I've worked with so far do not have a contingency built in to their scope of work or their bids. But the conversation is exactly what you said, Bill, is this is coming out of my pocket now to my profit. For a lot of times it's, what are we going to do moving forward to avoid this? And how are we going to remedy what's going on now? Are you going to split the cost with me? You know, what can we do to avoid the problem? But I ended up paying the difference to move the project along.
Yeah, my biggest piece of advice to all of you is, in the beginning, like you said, get a line item bid. This is a must have. And then look at it and make sure that it's reasonable. And in the beginning, when you're just getting started, you don't really know if that's reasonable. So find another flipper, find somebody else in your market, join the runway program or somewhere and say, hey, can you guys look at this bid for me? And somebody who's done this a long time said, there's no way he's going to finish that kitchen for, you know, $5,000. It's just not going to happen. Like, there's no way. The material alone is going to cost you that. There's no labor. This guy has no margin built in. He's definitely going to go over budget. There's no possible way that you get that project done for $25,000. And in the beginning, we think, oh, because they're going to sell us. Oh, yeah, I can do it. And then you're going to get hit with change orders. Now, a change order is fine. So I don't want to get everybody listening to this say a change order is not right. Like Heidi was talking about, when they open walls up and we find something new that wasn't on the original scope of work, that is going to change the budget. But if everything that we talked about in the first meeting, and they say they'll do it for $25,000, and we do everything that's on that original scope of work and it costs them $35,000, that's their problem, not ours. However, like Heidi said, there's a point where they just say, okay, well, like, I need to get paid and walk off the job. Like, you are in a partnership here. So they've got you right where they want you is the challenge. And there's great contractors. You just got to understand they're running a business, but they got to bring in. So I loved when my contractors brought in their subs. Their subs were bidding the job too. They were very open and honest and upfront about what they were making, about what they needed to make, about how their business ran so that we could work together. And I'm not the only one that's making money. We're both making money together. Like, I know they got to make money. I can't just like negotiate them down and chip away at every single thing so they don't make any money. They're not going to work with me again. And so in this case, if it's the exact same scope that was agreed at 25, but it's costing me 35 at the end of the project, I got a problem. Like, look, I can't do this. Like, this is just not how this business operates. And then I'll sit down with the contractor and say, did you bid this job knowing that it was going to be $35,000 and you just wanted the job? Like, what's going on here? Let's talk about it. Like, what happened? And then we figure out what happened and we go through the line items and say, why didn't this cost $1,500? Why did it cost $2,500? And they're like, well, this happened. You know, the timeline went over, or it rained for 5 days in a row and I had to rent the equipment longer, or, you know, the inspector couldn't come in time. So I had to get this contract, this sub in and then this sub later. It's just like all that stuff, which is very open and honest. And we want to catch this ahead of time. So that's just a tip for everyone listening. I think making sure that the contractor in the beginning can actually do the work for what they say, not just you're not taking the lowest bid. I would rather take a little bit higher bid and a contractor have more confidence in than the lowest bid and somebody who I'm like, I don't know how he's going to do this job for $25,000. Like, I don't see how it's possible. And in the beginning, when you don't know, this is how you learn. We learn from the contractors. We have conversations with them. We understand how their business works. We ask other people who are in the market and in the industry, what is this going to cost you to do? And when they tell me it's going to cost them 30 and you're like, well, I got somebody that's going to do it for 25, I bet they're going to end up like Heidi's contractor and do it for 35. So hope it does all that sound right, Heidi?
It does sound right. And, you know, I think that's very valuable for newer flippers is the more people I talk to, the more they struggle. I hear about their struggles with contractors. And to this day, I have struggles and I'm learning. That's why I love the program too, with the mentors and the coaching, learning how to deal with contractors and having agreements up front and
keep in mind, you're going to see this with everyone. Like, it's title companies, it's contractors, it's subcontractors, it's lenders. And if you treat them all like we're doing all this together and we're figuring out how it works, like I remember some of my contract, I just talked to a contractor of mine a couple of weeks ago. He called me, but he worked with me like we haven't worked together in probably 6 years. Just called to catch up, see how I was doing, saw something that I was, that I posted on social media. And it was just cool to catch up with him. But he was one of my favorite people to work with because we were both very open and honest with each other. And then, you know, we also worked with a lot of other subs together. And he was just like, hey man, I got to make money here. This is what I'm going to make. And then I was like, look, if we can do it for this, let's get the job done, man. If I make more, you'll make more. I'll give you a bonus. If I make more than, you know, 35, 40K, that's what I'm planning to make here. Then, you know, I'll kick you a couple thousand if we do well. And, you know, we're in it together. You know, we're all winning together. And that he was one of my best people. Like he would just come, he's handyman, a carpenter, could do almost anything. And if me and him were still doing this together, I would love it. So treat your people well, they'll treat you well. Okay, 35,000 sounds good. And then you got it done in 4.5 weeks, which is fast. That's great. Yeah. A lot of people will think like if they're moving really quick, like there's a lot of ways to kind of bid out this project. I would say if I had a 4.5 week project where I had people on site like the whole time, it was really efficient, I'd probably be expecting to spend like 35 to 45K. So a lot of people will put like 10K a week on like if you're running through this job really fast. But I wouldn't use that if you have like the last person I talked to had like a 3.5 month renovation project. But they only spent 60. That was just an inefficient crew, right? You know, overall. So 35K, 4.5 weeks. And then you listed it. You just listed on the market. What happened next?
Yeah. The same agent wholesaler that brought it to me listed it for me. It was not on the market very too long. We got a contract. It fell out of contract and then immediately went back under contract.
Okay. How much did you list it for?
We listed it for 230.
Okay, 230K. So you thought the ARV was 200. What changed in the matter of like a month and a half?
The comps. Some comps came up and people love the land.
The acreage. How much land was it?
It was 3/4 of an acre.
3/4 of an acre. Was it in the city? Where was it?
It's in a suburb, a town called Guyton, about 30 minutes outside of Savannah, but a very desirable school district.
Okay, so that helps.
Yes.
And there are other mobile homes around there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The whole community. So it's pretty common.
Yeah, the community, it was a community of mobile homes.
Okay, but they own the land. The community's there, mobile homes, but they own the land. So if you're out there looking for a property in that area, you know you're going to be getting a mobile home. It's not like one off in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So that helps. That definitely helps. So 230,000, saw some new comps. That's exciting. So bailed out the contractor. You got bailed out a little bit potentially on the ARV, right? And that's what happens sometimes is like, you don't understand how inefficient your business is because you keep getting bailed out by a rising market, higher comps, you're underestimating your ARVs, you're not pushing it, those kind of things. But imagine if the ARV, there's some comps that came back and the ARV went to like 180 from 200.
Right.
And you went from 25,000 to 35,000 in renovation. And this is where people get beat up in the market because those things happen.
Yes. And you have given that advice that you've got to be careful not to count on a strong market, so, and control your cost. So
yeah, and one thing that you could consider is like, okay, let's run the numbers. So and I'll talk about this at the end. So 230, you had somebody that put it under contract and fell out of contract. Why did it fall out of contract?
I think they just got cold feet. They were first time home buyers and they just got cold feet.
How long did that take?
It was during their due diligence, probably within the week that it fell out. But we had a backup offer, fortunately. Okay. So my agent contacted the backup offer and they jumped right back in. So
what was that first contract for? You listed it 230. What was the first contract for?
It was 225.
225. Okay. They got cold feet, fell out after a week. And then what was the second contract for?
225.
Okay. Good. So sometimes just to understand that sometimes these things fall out of contract and that is wasted time. And sometimes it also is like a mark on the property. So when it goes back up, a lot of times you might get it under contract for slightly less than you put under contract for before. So I'm always careful with like writing that contract for the first contract. usually my first buyer is my best buyer. And so I want, or the first group of buyers. So I definitely want to look at them. I'm going to shop them. I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to start understanding them. That first buyer is like, I want to get that one to closing, because if I don't, then that's 3 weeks, sometimes a month. I mean, I've been under contract for like 2 months with a VA, and then it falls out of contract. Then it takes another month to put it on. And this was before when the market was not as hot as it has been the past few years. But I mean, 3 months, imagine that's hard money cost. That's taxes on the home. That's insurance on the home. That is utilities for 3 months. I mean, that costs a lot of money for us. And people, a lot of times the buyers, they're like, oh, that's fine. Like, I'm in my inspection period. I'm just going to cancel. They're like, wait, what? You know? So just be careful of that. So I'm always looking at the contract. Like, I'm always thinking about what's going to happen if this falls out of contract. How long is it going to take? How long of an inspection period do they want? How long of a finance period do they want? Is there anything, any penalty if they don't close on time with the closing time, like the closing date? And so I'm always thinking about that. Okay, so 225. And then these people close, no problem?
No problem. Yep,
was there any problem with financing on the mobile home?
No. That qualified for all financing, so.
Really? So you can get a FHA loan on this thing, a VA loan on this thing. Did you check that before you bought it?
Yes. Yeah, we did. And that was the importance of having the title too, because obviously without a title, you wouldn't have been able to get that financing. So.
Yeah. So this sounds to be like, this is a higher price point. It's got land with it. A lot of times I'll see like mobile homes and land potentially that sell for like 50 to 60,000. And so one thing that I would give you caution of, if you're like, oh, I'm going to go flip a bunch of mobile homes, is understand what that market's like. It's really hard to get a loan on a property like 50, 60K with a mobile home attached to it. And then in some areas, lenders shy away from mobile homes. And so just consider that. I would definitely, financing is usually a thing that stops me from buying them on the front end. And so just keep that in mind in your area. That's something you want to look at. You want to definitely find some lenders that are open to financing mobile homes in your area. That way you can recommend people when buyers come in and they're trying to use like Navy Federal or USAA or some of these Bank of America that might not finance them, that you have a lender to point them to that they can work with. It's really helpful to make it more turnkey. So 225, you got it all closed, no issues. And then what did you make on this? So you bought it for 125, you put 35 into it. That's 160, 225. What was the net?
Well, the selling cost was not included in that. And so at the selling cost, I netted 35K.
Yeah.
That's
great. Okay. 35,000. So everybody knows this is not HGTV, right? 125,000. You got purchase costs. 35,000. Oh, we didn't talk about, how did you fund the deal? How did you fund it?
My line of credit.
Used your line of credit. Did you add that money cost into that $35,000 profit?
Oh, that is my net, the 35,000.
But so. you didn't charge money. You didn't take like money cost for you out of that 35K, or is it taken out?
It's taken out. Yeah, that was
so the interest that you paid yourself, that you had to pay the line of credit, is taken out of that 35K.
That's right. Yeah, my holding cost.
Okay. So there is, so you did include that. Some people that'll like self-fund their deals won't include it. So it'll get elevated, just like on Flip or Flop, when it's like, you just run the numbers like, oh, we made 85,000. Like, no, you didn't. You probably made 50.
Right.
So, okay. So we got $125,000 purchase. We got closing costs on the purchase. There's some fees on the purchase that you had to pay. There's $35,000 in renovation. There is utilities. There are taxes. There's insurance and there's money costs along the way. Then there's a sale price of 225, and then there's all the sale costs. There's, you know, stamps and duty and commissions to the realtors and all of those things that come out of there. And so 125 plus 35 is 160,000. Selling it for 225 on TV, they would say that you made $65,000.
Right.
So $65,000, and what you really made was 35,000. Almost half. So everybody out there, when you see all these numbers, there are so much. And what's happening is all that money is going to other people that are supporting all of this, right? It's going to the title company. It's going to the state. It's going to the county. It's going to the city. It's going to the utilities. It's going to the lender. And everybody's winning in this ecosystem that is involved in this real estate transaction. So going from 65,000 to 35,000. So now we got $35,000 approximate. Imagine if your original ARV, which was 200,000, right, came true on this deal.
Right.
Right. You would have made somewhere between 5 and 10,000.
Right.
And so, and that's that 5 or 10,000 is the actual ARV, right? And a $10,000 elevated cost in rehab. So you would have gone from five, let's say you rehabbed on budget 25,000, you would have made somewhere between 15 and 20,000. And so this is where we get into a bind. What if it goes from 200,000 to 190? And so over the last year and a half, that's kind of what we've seen. We've seen people that have maintained this elevated ARV, and we had a stalling market a little bit from, like, you know, a year ago, and they started seeing these ARVs just drop by $5,000 or $10,000. And they weren't getting saved by the increase in going from 200 to 230 and being surprised, and then house is selling in 5 seconds, 10 offers, over asking price, right? And so we drop 5 or 10,000, that's going to eat up a lot of our profit margin. And then when we have inefficient rehab going from 25 to 35,000, then we really get to the point where we start breaking even or losing money potentially. And so that's the cautionary tale that I'll tell to everybody that's out there, is don't expect your ARV to go way up from what you calculated. Like, if that happens, great. And so, Heidi, the one thing that I would say on this project, let's say you made an extra $20,000 than you probably should have. What if you took that $20,000 and put it in a mistake fund? Right. And you said, hey, okay, just on paper, like, I wouldn't say actually like park it somewhere, but on paper, I made $20,000 more than I should have on this house. And you just keep a list, like a running list of plus 20K. And then the next house, maybe you make an extra $5,000 than you thought you were going to make. And you keep a running log of that over the time that you're flipping houses. So you realize that when the market is really good, when it's really good, you made an extra $150,000 that year from unexpected increases in ARVs, right? And on the other side of that piece of paper, you could actually put what you were over budget. So on this one, you're over budget by $10,000. So your efficiency in rehab and timeline and management was $10,000. And so then over time, you see what your efficiency is on one side, and you see how the market helped you on the other. So you can see how legitimate, like, the amount of money that you made in your business was. And then next year, if you have a year where it's like a challenging year, potentially, you get to a place where you're like, oh, you know what? Like, I lost $50,000 in my ARVs this year, but last year I made an extra 120. And then you can actually kind of watch that and see, yeah, because a lot of times what happens is a flipper has a really great year and they forget about how much the market saved them the next year when the market gets tight. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's what I was thinking about as we were going through your numbers. I was like, what if you actually track that on every house that you ever did? Is like, the market bailed me out by, like, made me this much more money, and then my efficiency either made or, like, what if you had what if you're the one flipper on the planet that had a $50,000 rehab budget and you did it in 40? So you can add $10,000 to the left side. And then you're just kind of tracking that along the way. This is how my engineer data mind goes, is like, then you could see like how efficient your business is that year.
Yeah.
So I don't know, an idea for everybody out there. What are some things that that you feel like some of the programs that you've done or some of the resources that you had helped you on a deal like this?
Well, I mean, the coaching program has been very helpful. Even going into the deal, since I had no experience with mobile homes, to be able to talk to coaches that or others in my accountability group that had some experience, and they were able to give me clues and talk about issues like the title issue. That's been helpful.
Nice. Yeah, I think having other peers and bouncing ideas and questions off of them, that's what I did when I got started all the time. Like, I was just constantly asking questions. I appreciate you coming on the show today and going through this. I think like, number one, talking about a mobile home and some of the gotchas, those things, talking about the contractors, and then also talking about that securities-backed line of credit. This is really an unbelievable show that we were able to put together here today. Like, I'm really excited about the lessons that people can learn from this. Like, this is one of the best teaching shows I feel like we've had in a while, actually. Like, there's something brand new. I've never, ever talked about a securities backed line of credit. And I think that's going to help a lot of people. So if you're listening to this and that helped you, you have a brokerage account or some stocks, bonds, mutual funds, things like that, that you can figure out how to tap into with a line of credit, I want you to give Heidi a huge thank you, because I've never thought to talk about something like that on the show. And I don't know, actually never met anyone that was using that I know of to fund their deals or loan out money or things like that. It was amazing, brilliant. I'm really excited for you. And I think, you know, you've got a lot going on right now. I'm really excited to see where you go with the projects. How many projects do you have going on right now?
I have, as of today, I have three on the market, two active projects. I'm closing on one today and one next week. So it's super exciting.
Nice. So you've got some stuff all along the pipeline, which is great. Right. Keeping that pipeline full is what needs to happen to be a full-time real estate investor. Yeah. How can people find out more about you, or if they want to get in contact with you or ask you some questions, or like, what do you need? Is there anything that you need? Do you need some money? Do you need deals in your marketplace? Like, who should reach out to you, and how can they do it?
I'm always looking for deals. So if there's any wholesalers in the want to look in this area, I'm always looking for deals. They can reach me at Heidi@webuythelowcountry.com, or I'm on Facebook, just Heidi Pareto.
Nice. Well, thank you, Heidi, for being here. I had a good time. I think I learned a ton. It was really exciting. I think we were able to teach some people a lot of stuff, and I'm thankful for you that you said yes to come on the show. So thanks for being here, and everybody, I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you.